Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Letarte on Location. I'm your host, Steve Letarte, and location today is my favorite town, Daytona, Florida. I love Daytona, the home of the World Center of Racing, Daytona International Speedway, and that's actually our view because the guest today is Jill Gregory, which you have an impressive title. So let me make sure I get it right. Executive Vice President, Chief Marketing Officer.
Yes, so the more words, the better.
Right? I like that. Well, thanks for joining. So we're actually in the NASCAR Tower overlooking the Speedway. It's a beautiful tower. So listen, your title's where we start. What I learned when I came to the TV world is that I didn't understand what all these people did. So I think I know what you do, but tell the listeners, what does the EVP and the CMO of NASCAR, what exactly is your responsibility?
Other than keep the alphabet straight?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so marketing, it encompasses a lot. So, I mean, I think on the most basic level, we want to give fans more of what they love about NASCAR, and we want more fans to come experience, come buy a ticket, go to a race. We have the best competition. We've got, you know, the most talented drivers. We've got the best experience. So how do you expose that to more people? So that could be things like television campaigns and the spots that you see running on the NBC broadcast, digital and social, obviously huge for us. Getting our drivers engaged on social gives fans a better way, an easier way to kind of feel what the drivers are feeling, kind of learn what they are doing inside the car and underneath the helmet, if you will, and just try to get NASCAR in front of more people. And if we do that, then sponsorships and ratings and attendance, that all takes care of itself.
So, you know, you and I had the same challenge. The stars are so dynamic in my mind, but they live in a car with a helmet
right on.
So you know, unlike a baseball or a basketball player where you kind of see the emotion, you see that, you know, we have to work getting them out of the car.
Absolutely.
And you have all of these different tools, whether it's social.com, the app. We work well together on the broadcast side. Another thing that I am a big fan of is the fantasy game.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of engagement. Like, my wife will watch. She has no interest in football. But if she's having a good fantasy week, she'll watch the Sunday night game. Like,
absolutely.
She's really interested to see how her person
right
does. I joke that I cheer people on at the end of stages because of my fantasy. So bring the listener, where do you stand on the fantasy? A success? I mean, relaunched a year ago,
yep,
2 years ago now, I guess.
I think it's fantastic. I think that, you know, the kind of shoulder program and the other places where you guys talk about fantasy and give us your predictions. And, I mean, I take your predictions each and every week, Steve, and I am proud to say I'm second in the league at NASCAR.
Oh boy.
I was finished second in the league last year, so I got one position to make up. But I think, you know, the biggest change we made is the garage driver, which I think
right
is great, although I totally psych myself out at the end of a stage because I'm like, oh, crap, there's four laps left. Do I have time to change my driver? Last week I had all of my drivers were relatively the same in terms of the points they had gotten so far. I took Brad out. I put him back in the garage, and I was like, oh. So that engagement with them, with fans throughout the game and throughout the race is awesome.
I've literally bad-mouthed drivers for wrecking in the final stage like it's their fault. Like, you should have done this earlier.
Or what about when they pit before the end of the stage
and you think they're going to
get stage points?
I know.
It's
the road courses get to be difficult for sure. Look, we have a lot to cover, but I want to know how a girl who is a journalism major from Cal Polytech ends up in, I mean, NASCAR, that's a long, there's no way those dots connect directly, right? It's a long curve. So I've read your bio, I understand it, but just explain, like, so a journalism major, from there you went to an agency.
I did.
So all of these different levels kind of prepared you for this, I assume.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think everybody's career path might be the same. It's like every step where you don't know it at the time is going to lead you to that next opportunity. You know, I grew up in a sports family, did not race, played tennis, which, again, pretty long leap from playing tennis
right
to being.
There isn't, though.
No,
you know,
there
what
isn't.
I've learned is that this is a compliment, although it may not sound it, is all of us in sports are equally dysfunctional. Like, we're not like the rest of the world. So I think we can relate to anyone in any sport better than we can to someone in the real world.
Well, and I totally agree. I think, too, that our lifestyle choices are dysfunctional. Like, you choose to be on the road for amount of times a weekend. You spend more time with your work family many times than your home family. There's a lot of people that wouldn't want to do that. But I think if we didn't have that travel, that week-to-week excitement, I think that it would be difficult. So whatever you want to call it, an adrenaline rush or, you know, this kind of constant action and variety, I think it's what makes us tick, are the people that love being out here. It's a unique lifestyle, but I think we all love it.
Even our loved ones, now that I work for television, you know, I used to be on the full season, and now about May, my wife will be like, You got to go to a few before you're half.
Right? Yeah,
you
still here?
Right. So Cal Poly Tech, you end up down in Houston in an agency, and then you move to the big city.
Yeah.
End up in New York City.
Yep.
I mean, the list of corporate, Texaco, Sprint Nextel, Bank of America. I mean, you hit all of the biggest, you know, Fortune, I guess, probably 200 or 300 companies in the world. What was your roles there, different roles you took there, and how did that prepare for what you have to do now?
Yeah, I think that, you know, working for big brands like that spent a lot of money. So Texaco, I think, probably gave me my in to motorsports, obviously.
Right.
Texaco, gasoline and motor oil. So I got into NASCAR, and I think that all of us that are involved in the sport, I feel like, you know, what's the Godfather quote? You know, every time you try to get out, they pull you back in.
Oh, yeah, that's how it works.
So just – and the sense of community out here, you – establish relationships and you get to know people. And even when you kind of move to different places, you still have people to come back to. And so the Sprint Nextel piece was probably crucial in where I am today, just in terms of being immersed into the NASCAR world. You know, that was when Nextel came on board, took over for Winston, huge amount of money, a lot of activation. And I think, Steve, you'd remember this, you know, cell phones with driver numbers and pictures on them, and Sprint Vision or Nextel Vision, the Nextel experience. I mean, it really gave me the ability to get back into NASCAR with both feet. And it was fantastic. I mean, that brand recognition, it just has showcased what NASCAR can do for brands.
Well, the value's still there. This is still a Sprint phone, right? Once you're in, you're in.
That's
No, I remember, I mean, that was a major shift. It only took me about 18 months to not call it the Winston Cup Series.
Yeah.
I did better switching to Monster. I guess I had a little bit of training. But I remember when Sprint came in, it was way more than just a naming rights thing for me as a crew member. Yeah. So I was on Gordon's crew at the time. It was everything, right? Yeah. Like the different look, different colors, different activation.
Right.
We went from a tobacco company to a technology company.
Right.
It was a completely different look.
Yeah. And it was amazing to work on because the ability to kind of start new and not have kind of the way it used to be done was a huge eye opener. And I keep looking at the track, you know, involved in every piece of it, what happened at the track, what happened with the race teams, you know, how we promoted to the fans, just a ton of opportunity there. And I think that, you know, one thing I've learned that NASCAR is just such a huge platform for these brands, and you kind of take it for granted when you're out here. We're looking at the, you know, the Sunoco injector. I mean, there's so many ways for these brands to engage, and that was just fun to work on because you saw the fans adopt the brand that spent a lot of money. So it works, and I think that's the exciting part, and that's allowed me to kind of take that jumping off point and work for NASCAR itself and continue to focus on the fun and excitement. Like, we work in racing, we work in sports.
Right.
I mean, you know, my dad will say this all the time. It's like, it's not a real job.
Right.
Like, well,
right.
It kind of is.
Yeah.
But I get to have fun and it's with people that we like, and it's not that it's not hard work, but there's also a backdrop of racing that we all get to enjoy.
My boss always says, he starts every big meeting with, listen, it's not brain surgery. We're talking about sports.
Right.
Like if people, you know, they can tune into the news. They can tune it all. They're tuning in to hear what myself, Dale Jr., Jeff Burton have to say, to be entertained.
Have fun.
Like, so we have – I try to convince them. I've yet to do this. They remember in, like, the 70s, they said baseball commentators used to have, like, one beer they could sip throughout the whole game. I tell my boss, if you gave Dale Jr. and I, like, one or two beers – three maybe on a 500-mile race. It would be way better, but he's convinced there'd be too much risk. He's probably right. But,
well, you know, I think, didn't you guys do that? Like, watching an Xfinity Series
we
race
did.
One
we
time?
We did. We had
so,
a few
I mean,
on the Xfinity app.
I think there's something
yeah,
there,
that's
but
right.
I don't know, maybe not on the Daytona 500.
I like that. I like
here.
That. I'm jealous. Jeff Gordon and I talk about that all the time, so I think everyone knows who's listening, but if you're not, so I work for NBC, which is the second half, basically June to November, and Gordon is jealous because I always have the playoffs and the championship, and I'm jealous because he has the Daytona 500. So yeah. That's my wish list. I'm going to try to – my wife's my agent, Tricia, so I'm going to see if she can somehow work me onto the Daytona 500 broadcast. We'll see how that goes.
Love it.
I wrote down here people. Listen, I'm only sitting here today because Jeff Gordon thought a 26-year-old kid should be a crew chief. No idea why he thought that, but that's kind of start of my career. I've read a lot of different articles you've been in. You mentioned your relationship with Steve Phelps. You had met him along the way, and he's probably the one – and make sure I have this correct. I read it as he was probably the biggest influence to get you back over to the NASCAR side.
He was. I actually met Steve when I was at an agency, that first agency you referenced, and he was at the NFL. So, again, another kind
right.
of – not a linear path for any of us, really, but got to know him then. And, you know, I had someone early on in my career say, you know, sound so cheesy, network and,
right, right.
you know, be good to people. And it's not, you know, again, not brain surgery, but kept a relationship with him. He moved over to NASCAR and really wanted to create a group that was more relatable to the teams and to the drivers in particular. And that was even before, you know, we had kind of the groups that we have now on social media, but just, you know, someone that was able to work together with the industry, drivers, mm-hmm. crew members, team owners, just to, you know, make NASCAR bigger and better. So he brought me on to NASCAR in 2007,
right.
which seems like so long ago. I moved to Charlotte, and we started a group that was really designed to help teams and drivers, and that's just evolved. I think the great thing about NASCAR as a company and NASCAR as a community is that it's all about relationships. And
yep.
when you build those and you invest them, you know, they pay off. And then I've been lucky enough to have that happen.
So, one reason I think you're fascinating is because, so I obviously have a relationship with you through the sport and all, and I don't know, the way I've been raised, that I, male, female makes no difference to the position, but I don't think we can sugarcoat the fact that you have moved up the ranks and now hold a powerful position, not just in NASCAR, but in most, all of sports, in what has been generally considered a male-dominated field.
Right.
Other than Lisa France Kennedy.
Yep.
You're probably the most prominent female in NASCAR. So really my question is, A, you know, do you feel, is there pressure to that? Do you feel a responsibility to that? I mean, doing my research, I saw that you know, you have multiple different things going on. Holding that title in that position, I mean, how do you consider it?
You know, it's funny. You get asked that a lot, right?
Right,
it's like,
right.
how does it feel to be a woman?
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's like, well, I am one, so I can't really,
that's
you know,
right.
can't change that.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that when you get asked that, it's a hard question to answer, because if I'm walking into this, you know, room
right.
and I'm in a meeting, I don't immediately say, oh, I'm the only woman, but 99% of the time I am.
That's right.
So, but I think if you think about it on a day-to-day basis, you're putting more importance on it. I think that, you know, you get in here, you do a good job, you have good ideas, you have an opinion. And again, back to relationships, it's, you know, having the confidence in your own ideas and knowing that you've got strong relationships that you can kind of make an impact and make an influence on things. So Lisa Kennedy and I have talked about it before. She's like, do you hate it when you get that question? And I'm like, no, I understand why people ask it, but I don't look at it day to day. Like when I first started at NASCAR, I got to go to the competition meetings.
Ah.
And this was back in the day of John Darby, Robin mm-hmm. Pemberton. It was a 3-hour meeting at the R&D Center, and they were talking about gear ratios.
Right.
And, you know, I knew enough at that point to not say anything because
right.
I was
right.
new. I was young. I didn't know anything about gear ratios. But I soaked it all in. And I think as, you know, years went on and I knew more about the business, then I gained confidence. But, you know, I don't think anybody, to your point, has treated me differently. I mean, you know, it's naive to say that it's not difficult sometimes.
Right.
But I think that more and more you see out in, you know, the garage area, you see on pit road, you know, what you guys are doing on the broadcast, there are more and more female voices there. And, you know, hopefully there'll be a day when that's not a consideration. But while it is, I think, you know, what I can do is just set a good example and hope that people, other women, you know, see that there is a path to be involved in NASCAR and don't get intimidated by the fact that, you know, there aren't as many as you'd like.
Well, personally, you helped me. So I have a 13-year-old daughter who has, you know, she's from this age where she doesn't see any barriers, which is beautiful, right? She thinks she can do whatever, as she should. But as a parent, I try to find role models like you right. to prove that it can be done, right. whether it's Haley Deegan in the race car, whether it's you on the executive team, whether it's just the large female fan base that NASCAR has. One thing I love about my new job is I'm out of the garage, yeah. walk through the stands, yeah. up into the booth. I have more interaction than I ever have had with the fans, and it shocks me the number of female fans, young fans, like the diversity and the demographics of the fan base surprised me. Yeah. I guess when you think about, right. you know, tires and gears and cars, right. it just proved to me that it's not about tires. It's the guys that drive. It's a sport. It's competition. So so you've helped me. I found this quote, and it's your quote, and I actually have used this a couple times. But you said, if you work hard, do your job the right way, be good to people, and deliver results, success will come to you. And that is kind of like the mantra I give my kids. Like, yeah. look, everything I've done in life has been try to choose it for the right reasons, and I'm lucky enough to kind of back into yeah. these great jobs. So I was when I read that quote, it meant a lot to me. So that's why I asked you the question. Was more not just as an executive, but right. young females moving up through the world. You know, do you go out of your way if you see someone like that? Do you try to go out of your way and mentor them?
I do. I think that it's part. You can do it informally or formally, but I think, you know, one of the things you mentioned earlier is like having someone to look up to. So if there's someone that looks like you, then you can say, oh, this can
right,
be done.
Right.
This is open to me.
Yep.
So that's part of it. But I think there's also things that I felt like, particularly over the last couple of years, where I could help that. We started a group within NASCAR where women executives and in leadership roles have a place to ask questions and talk to. Maybe you're intimidated to go
right.
to your boss, or you're not sure how to handle something. Yeah, I think in years past, you just have to wing it or use your instincts. But I think if I can provide that help and not be, you know, a barrier or be intimidating to some of the young females in our organization, I think that's great. I just did an interview with Kelly Earnhardt and Caitlin Vinci.
Yep.
I think there are more, there's more camaraderie and more kind of a shared responsibility to expose our sport to more young females.
Mm-hmm.
So I love doing that. And I think to your point, our fans are 50% female
right.
or thereabouts. And when you see the family oriented, you know, the family activities out at the racetrack, you see them in the stands, you see all this healthy competition between the same family members that have favorite drivers. You know, our fans, male, female, you know, young, old, they're out there to love the experience. And
right.
if we can kind of showcase that, then we're doing what we should do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I tell everyone, I get to do public speaking. I'm a kid from a small town in Maine that would have been 30-something in my graduating class. And I was lucky enough to be Ray's neighbor, and that's how I ended up on a race team. And so I started a kind of an internet-based thing to try to spread the potential jobs in NASCAR, because I feel that the industry as a whole, I'm not going to say the sanctioned body, but the industry, the race teams, it's the same people moving around, and they're not necessarily the best people, right? The world's a big place. Go find. I think we've seen it with our driving,
right?
right? Like, once we found Jeff Gordon from California, now the owners looked nationwide. And then when Juan
right.
Pablo came in, now Daniel Suarez, right. now they're looking worldwide. You had an interview a while back that asked, you know, where's NASCAR going to be in 5 or 10 years, and used the word global. And I completely agree. I think the fan base, the competitors on the racetrack, it's going that way quickly. So this is what I've learned. The best way to get to know somebody is going to do some quick hitters here. These are supposed to be lighthearted, so have a fun time
okay.
with them. So, all right, I try to get it in position where nobody gets in trouble. So, I'm going to say, what is the best part of your current job?
Best part of my current job, I think, is the ability to affect change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we can with the current leadership. You know, you mentioned Steve Phelps, Jim France, obviously. You know, kind of took the reins around this time last year, last summer. They let us have good ideas and go do them. And
right.
it's, you know, quick, and show me it's going to work, and you can make a difference. And I think for anybody, whatever job you're in, I don't know, that's how I'm wired. You want to make a difference. You're not
yep.
here to punch the clock or just kill some time. And so I think today is like, we can implement things that we wouldn't have considered just a few years ago. So right now, I think that's the best thing.
We all have one. My wife says hotels. She's a self-admitted hotel snob. What is the worst part of travel for you?
Airlines.
Airlines. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm the same way. Like, and you get duped into this expectation. Like, you'll go 6 or 7 flights, and the connections will be fine, and everything will be great, and then we'll run into each other at the bar at Richmond while we're waiting on a delayed flight out of the night race, right? Like, that's how it's
And you're having this huge debate on, okay, if we leave right now, we can get home if we drive, and all 5 of us can drive together. And they're like, nah, let's wait. It might go.
I know. We had the same thing. We booked a flight to come here down to Daytona from Charlotte, and I booked it 90 days ago, and it was an 8 o'clock flight because I had a NASCAR America. And then you got the – well, now it's an 8:30. Mm. Now it's a 9. And then we showed up. We left at 12:30. We landed here at 2 a.m. But I want to applaud the Hertz guy here, because I knew there was going to be nobody at the rental car counter, and he was still there. So he saved my day. But all right, so airlines. So my wife helped me with this one, because she is also a big old school rap fan.
Oh, yes.
So she goes, it's a real simple question. It's East Coast, West Coast.
West Coast, immediately.
She goes, listen, she's a West Coast college girl. There's no way she's going to say East Coast.
No way.
So there's a restaurant in Cornelius, where I live. When you order oysters, they, you know, East Coast, West Coast, or and it either has a picture of Tupac or Biggie. And that's how you know which one it
you
came from.
You have to go Pac. I mean, there's no comparison. I'm sorry you're from Maine, so maybe you've got the East Coast bias.
I'm just not, well, like, I'm like older school than that before it even got divided. So I like I'm Run DMC, Beastie Boys. There was no coast at this point. Yeah. It was just, all right, I figured it was going to be West. So then the follow-up then, if it's West Coast, what's your, like, go-to? You have, like, a song?
California or Love by Tupac.
That's.
I also go with Ice Cube, It Was a Good Day.
Oh, that's so never like, wrong.
Go into an interview like this, or go like getting yourself in the right frame of mind, I'll put on Sirius XM Fly.
I like that.
And hope for a good mix.
I love that. All right, so this kind of goes with travel. Everybody has one. What's your go-to drink? Like, when you're out, you know, you gotta everyone has to have a go. So I'm real simple. Well, the problem is I'm a big variety, right? So I love wine, but it's not my go-to when I'm out, because I've turned into a wine snob, and I have this wine that I like at home, you know. So I'm just a simple, I don't do brown liquor. And I don't do tequila.
Oh,
so I'm a simple vodka.
Limited.
I'm just a vodka soda, vodka tonic guy. That's my go-to, because it's hard to mess up.
So this is going to sound kind of snobby, but I love champagne. My grandmother taught me very early on, don't save the nice bottle of wine or nice bottle of
champagne
for a special occasion. If it's a Tuesday, it's a Tuesday.
And we drink better wine playing Monopoly on a Tuesday with our kids. Because if you save it, you never know.
No, you never know. And you know what? Red Solo Cup is fine for a nice glass of wine in a pinch. But I think that, to your point, sometimes you can't count on a good champagne selection.
No. Nope.
So I'm a captain and diet with a lot.
Okay.
With a lime.
All right. Yep.
And I found in the garage I have a lot of Captain Morgan.
I was going to say
fans.
You and Chad Knaus. I've worked with Chad a long time. You
Martin,
and Chad.
Yep. Larson. Lots of captain.
You have
captain
them.
Morgan
so fans. So I digress. I'm going to give a champagne. So my wife. Never, you know, the only champagne you have, unless you've been taught this, is the wedding champagne, which is awful.
Right.
So then you just think champagne in general is awful. So we were in Las Vegas at the Wynn Tower, you know, that lobby down there in the Wynn Tower. We go there for the banquet. First or second year with Dale Jr. Amy's with us. Dale has an event. Rooms aren't ready. We're going to sit there and have a drink. Amy orders a glass of champagne. Yeah. My wife's like, I don't like champagne. She takes a sip. She's like, oh, that's not any champagne that I've ever had. We'll get a bottle of that. And then the problem is, you know, that location, like Grand Central Station. So we sat there. What was going to be 30 minutes turned into 5 hours. And Mr. Helton came by. He had a drink. And
you know,
every driver came
coming.
In. Oh, yeah. So next thing you know, it's like 7 in the early evening. And we were in no shape to go anywhere else. So we retired for the evening. But that was where she learned her go-to is now champagne.
That's a very good choice. And they have a really good rosé champagne at that point.
Oh, it's great. It's great. All right. A little NASCAR one here. Day race, night race. What do you prefer? Not on the business side. This is a personal preference.
Well, you know, there's something about the night race with the cars and the colors and the lights. And, you know, Richmond used to be my favorite track just when I first started coming to races. You could sit in turn one for the Richmond night race and see the cars come off the corner. And just the lights and the sound. I think the Bristol night race, the pre-race at the Bristol night race where you just sit and you see the kids doing the Pledge of Allegiance and then the flyover and, you know, all the fans. But I don't know. There is nothing like the Daytona 500 because I've been coming to a lot and I haven't missed a 500 in many, many years. And there's something about when you come through the tunnel, you're coming from probably cold weather. It's nasty and you're here and the sun's out. And you're like, okay, here we go with another season.
See, so I'm torn the same way. So I say night races because people grow up, people grow up. I was going to racetracks with my dad in New England, right? And they were all Saturday night or Friday night. But then my heroes, race during the day because there was very few night races, if any, when I watched it on TV. So I have the same problem. I go back and forth. It's a venue thing for me. So I am a fan of big track day races, short track night races because I can connect with a Martins. Like, I can't wait for the Xfinity. Martin. You know, it's going to be great. This, I don't know, that size of track, it kind of connects what, you know, where my roots were. So,
well, the great news is that we have a bunch of choices, right?
That's
so
right.
It's like you don't have to pick one.
That is. That is the key. And that's why I love the schedule. I won't say I'm a world traveler, but I have the country. Other than the Pacific Northwest, I've kind of seen it all. So that's on my to-do list. Jeff Gluck, I keep telling him he can invite me. He lives up there. So
I would go up there. It's beautiful.
That's what I keep hearing. So, all right. So lastly, and this might take some thought, but this is says a lot because you never know where someone's going to go. You got a table for four. You can invite three people, dead, alive, past, present. Who would you invite to – like, who is on your list that you would love to have dinner with?
No rules.
Like, I'll tell you mine. Why you think? So, okay. I'm a big golfer, right? So, I would love to sit down with Arnold Palmer. He just seems like a gentleman. I love to talk all of this stuff. It's great. I'm a big fan, and my dad is the only reason I'm in racing. So I appreciate every moment he's around. So, I would probably sit down with him. And then I'm not much of a political guy, but I think there's some major people in our world that have kind of changed. So, like, either an Eisenhower or a JFK. Like, I would love to hear what it was like back in that era that I didn't live with. So, mine are kind of boring, but those would be the three I would take.
No, that's not boring at all.
I would learn a lot.
Really,
if Palmer could fix my putting, I could beat DJ. It'd be good.
Well, if you had a few minutes with him,
that's
you're
right.
going to ask
right.
him the things that matter,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of the same way. I would love to sit down with like a Chris Evert or, even Steffi Graf when I was growing up, like just these really core athletes that just were at the top of their game and like dominant during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to copy you, but I put my dad or my mom. I mean, we're very close-knit family of two sisters, mom and dad. My dad came out to Sonoma, cause that's kind of our home track. Always have a ton of fun with them, and I always get to use his sayings in other interviews and things like that. Like, y'all complain about work one day. He's like, "Did you get paid this week?"
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Dad. Okay, well, then stop complaining. Yes, got it. So he would be a good one. I think that, you know, I didn't get to spend much time with Bill France Jr. In my career, but I've heard some amazing stories, just how he could crystallize an issue or kind of set you straight in a pretty quick conversation. So I think that would be a good one. And I think that I'm not a history buff per se, but I think to your point, I kind of President Obama, this is a kind of a unique personality to me. I think he'd be a great conversationalist.
Right.
And I think that, you know, that would be kind of fun to do. So I get to do a lot of great things. So it's hard. I think you do too. Like, people that, you know, see, like, I have cousins that go to the track in Sonoma and they're like, "Oh my God, NASCAR, like, you get to do all the things that we would love to do." They took me to my first race. So when I'm in Michigan and on a golf cart with Jeff Gordon, that's not a big deal.
That's right.
But for anybody else, that would be a huge deal. So I feel kind of lucky where I get to do some of those things in my day-to-day life.
I laugh, you know, so I struggle with the whenever I'm asked about mentors. There's some obvious ones, Mr. Hendrick, Jeff Gordon. And when I get asked a question, like, I struggle with both of those because you mentioned Bill Jr. and how he kind of captivates the room or the stories go. I wasn't around him as much as well. But there are so many people I currently deal with. Rick Hendrick's that way. I've been in rooms with some very important people, but when Rick Hendrick walks in, there's this aura about him that everyone is waiting for him to make a move, whatever it might be, where you sit at dinner, what you're going to order, what, you know, he kind of drives that conversation. There's been so many sponsors and guests at the racetrack that they're so just powerful people. Bill Clinton, I got to hear him speak once, and it became very clear how he became president, because in like 5 minutes, I was like, okay, he has the whole room, like front to back, you know, poor to rich, woman, male. It didn't matter. Yeah. He spoke to everyone.
And like a unique ability to like make it seem like you're the one that matters.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
I crushed my wife. So you're going to appreciate this. This is a New York City banquet. Tom Cruise was there for some reason. He ended up at our table. And my wife, you know, introduced, and he's like, sits, leans forward. "Oh, it's so nice to meet you," shakes her hand. And she, you know, she's like, because she's Tom Cruise, and this is Top Gun's her movie. So this is the big thing. And she said, you know, he made me feel like I was the only one in the room. And I should have just let her have the moment. But instead, I was like, Well, he is an actor. I mean, like, he is a, you know, I mean, he's won, like, Oscars and Emmys and all that. And the look, I'll never get that moment back. I should have just was quiet.
You know, you seem smarter than that.
I know.
Steve.
Well, I've learned a lot of honor under the bridge, yeah, for sure.
I got to put Tupac on my list, too.
Okay, yes. Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of good ones. Mm-hmm. So, listen, like I said, I appreciate the time. We've talked a lot about you. Let's talk a little bit about the sport, your position. Throughout, I kind of, your whole thing has been about, you know, fan engagement and marketing and the stories. And look, it's no secret that NASCAR, much like a lot of other sports, it's been a tough 6, 7, 8 year figure out the time frame, right? Like, I'm a big Patriots fan, but even the football stadium in Charlotte's not full every week. The basketball, right. Like, everyone is you know, I have my phone sitting here, right? I don't read the newspaper anymore because I can subscribe to all the right things and I can get this instant access. You, fortunately or unfortunately, are kind of chaired with trying to stay ahead of that.
Yeah.
But now the 2019 season, I can talk about on the track. That's what I get paid to do. I've been fascinated. It's been excellent. My head hurt after Chicago because looking out the window at all the great racing, I didn't know where to go next.
Right.
I think we struggled some on the broadcast because it was so captivating. We're trying to tell the production guys what battle we should show, and that has translated. So when I look at Fox's numbers for the first half of the year, which we're very thankful at NBC, they've done a great job of handing it off to us. Over 4 million people a race watch on average. Up 3% where the landscape is down 8 or 10%. It seems like there's a lot of positive.
Yeah.
Does that make you happy, or does that keep you up at night? You know, is that like, because you're in the end, right? You have to kind of figure out what's next.
Well, it definitely makes me happy, and it makes me happy not just for me and kind of for the team, for the people that work in NASCAR. I mean, we all love this sport, and you want to see it be successful. You know what you see at the track every weekend, the entire experience, and to see the team that we work with each and every week have a spring in their step and be excited.
Right.
And it's like, you know, the things that we tried this year are working. And that's important because it is a tough environment. And, you know, not only are we competing against other forms of motorsports, but, you know, the competition for share of attention, your phone, the entertainment, what you and your wife can do on a weekend, your kids. It's just, it's harder than it ever was. And that's not an excuse. That's just a fact. And
you know,
so
that's the landscape. Yeah.
And if we're not willing to adapt, and I mentioned our leadership earlier, like there were times when it was like, this is the way we do things. And, you know, just fit within that box and you'll continue to get the same results. And you know, it's very clear that we have to keep changing if we're going to be relevant. And so seeing those numbers for Fox, I mean, those are not by accident. We put a ton of work into, okay, why is this happening? What can we do to shift our focus and see some success? And it's working. So it gives all the people in the garage, out of the garage, in this building, kind of that excitement, like that validation. Yes, you know, what we love to do, other people love it too. So, you know, it puts a big, you know, kind of a target on us for the rest of the year, but that's fine because I think that we're going to continue to do the same things. We have, you know, the partnership with NBC, which we're thrilled about, and the enthusiasm you guys bring. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before. The energy in the booth and the fact that you not only love racing, you guys like each other, you like what you're doing, that's contagious. And so we share that with more fans. And so, you know, I think that we still have a lot of work to do, you know, to stay, you know, top of mind for fans with so many choices. But I feel like even what we're seeing on the racetrack to what we're doing from a marketing standpoint, we're headed in the right direction. And that gives everybody a ton of enthusiasm. And, you know, attitude is half the battle, right? If not more.
It is. It is. If everyone's in a positive state of mind, it's so much easier. I use retail. So people, they want to look at sports, and it's always easy to criticize. Oh, the league should have done that. This team should have. I mean, it's really easy as a fan, right? And I'm one, right? When the Red Sox pick up this pitcher, I'm like, what are they thinking? How, you know, I was the guy for Dale Jr. that took all that criticism. So I use retail because everyone can relate to it. And I remind everyone I know had a Blockbuster card. Everyone. Right. You rented your movies at Blockbuster. Now there's one Blockbuster left in the world.
It's like Alaska or something?
Yeah, right. So my point is, like, if you don't skate where the puck is going, to use a Sam Flood hockey analogy, then you're done, right? If you're chasing it, you will not survive. So my joke is, my first contract with NBC didn't have the word digital in it.
That was
in 2013. Yeah. There was no digital, right?
Which was not that long ago, right?
Right, 2013. This is my fifth year of TV, and there was no digital world. So you are in charge of NASCARDigitalmedia.com, all the things. How do you decide what's next? When I look at your NASCAR being one of the five or six big leagues, right? We have baseball, hoops, I wrote down, football, hockey, mm-hmm. golf. Do you sit down with the other sports and try to do it together? Or do the sports try to figure it out kind of on their own? Like, how does that work for the fan to understand?
You know, I think that there's a few times a year where you have the opportunity to get together with some of your other league kind of colleagues. The interesting thing is that I think all of the other major stick and ball leagues also have CMOs that are female. So there's another kind of connection point that we have at certain events. But I think for the most part, we try to take our own world and look kind of competitively at what other people are doing, mm-hmm. what's working well. But our sport, as you know, is very different, you know, both in the construct of teams, drivers, tracks, venues, yes. all independent and kind of coming together.
It's like a complicated version of golf is how I try to explain right. it to people, right? It's very different than anything.
So that there's that consideration. But, you know, I think that the storytelling, the personalities, what happens out there, the excitement, that's universal. So mm-hmm. the NBA has a different way of delivering the last 2 minutes of an NBA game, the highlights, dunks. Yep. You know, we have to figure out what our version is of that and how do you bring that action closer to the fans. And I think for us, digital and social is tremendous because the technology can make it feel like what Dale saw in the car.
Right,
what,
right.
you know, a
that
driver
360
feels,
camera, right?
You 360 have the, yeah, cameras, yeah. you know, in-car chatter, you know, all of the things that NASCAR has. Access has always been kind of at the core of what we do mm-hmm. just by virtue of people being so close to the drivers and to the action. But technology can do that even more for us now. So in-car cameras, streaming that on Twitter, you know, getting more eyeballs to understand what we do. Because once you know and you're like, holy crap, these guys
right,
are
that's right.
on the wheel for 3.5 hours on a Sunday. The temperature in the car is 120 degrees. Like, you can't replicate that as much as you'd like to. So we have to use some of these digital and social opportunities to showcase what our guys are doing each and every week.
I challenge everyone. So listen, obviously I'm selfish. I work on the TV side. Yeah, I'd love for you to watch, but go in person. I've yeah. never met anyone who hasn't gone to a facility, walked up the stairs, and walked out into the grandstands and not just like, wait, so that's how big this place is? Like we try hard on television, yeah. but it's hard to captivate 200 miles an hour. It's hard right. to captivate the acreage in which Daytona Speedway is. And
right.
it just really is. It's much like I think other sports are trying that same way, but the difference is everyone in gym dribbles a basketball, throws a football.
Right.
I mean, that's just part of the American culture where racing, it's hard to connect to. But once you find that connection, you know, you can't shake it. That's what
no,
I've learned.
I think you're absolutely – we call it kind of the gateway drug, like coming to
it
a
is.
Track.
It's unbelievable.
Kind of, and I think you – I'm going to change one of my answers from before. You said the best part of my job, and I think another one would be – when I get to take around a celebrity or a new sponsor to the track for the first time
right.
and it's Sunday morning and you're walking through and you're seeing all the preparation, you're walking down the grid, you know, doing all of the pre-race activities, the sun's out, like all of the fanfare, the sounds, the smell, it's like an experience like no other. And every time the person, whoever it is like, I had no idea
right.
that this is what it was like.
Yeah, I've crew chiefed hundreds of races, been a crew member for at least hundreds more. Now I've been a broadcaster for probably 100, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
When the jets fly over and the national anthem's done, you're like, wow, this is getting ready to happen.
Right.
This is like,
right.
this is a
it's
big
go time.
Well, yeah, it really is. It's something that sports provides that very very little else in the world
right.
kind of does.
Yeah.
Like a great movie captivates you. Like you forget you have a phone, you forget you have an appointment that afternoon.
Right.
I feel the same way when I watch a race or if I'm there in person, it kind of just pulls me
right.
in and that's kind of how it all goes down. I wrote one down here because I'd love to get your take on this. So you work for NASCAR, but where does your role fall into helping a driver become a star? So Ryan Blaney, and so my first answer is this, and I'm ice cold when I say it. I was like, oh, this guy needs to be a star. I said, well, you know how stars are made? And they say, how's that? I said, you win. Everybody kind of looks at me, and I said, and you don't just win a little. You win a lot, and guess what? You win, like, Hall of Famers are made in the playoffs.
Right.
So I'm a big sports fan, right? I don't really care what you've – like, in the big moments, if you're not the big
Who
in the
delivers?
Biggest moments, then you're – you know, everybody's like, well, Dale Sr., I'm like, yeah, he won.
Right.
Jeff Gordon, he won the inaugural break. Like, how many more examples right. do you want me to give of – these people just didn't trickle in. You know, everybody talks about Jeff Gordon's Saturday Night Live appearance, and it was wonderful, and I was a crew chief at the time. Like, I'm not knocking that. But he was on Saturday Night Live because he's a multiple-time Daytona 500 champion, because he won the biggest races. So I realize it has to happen on the racetrack. But assuming they can do that, where do you step in to try to help navigate the rest of that kind of crossover?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I absolutely agree with you. And every piece of research, everybody you talk to, fans care about winning on the track. That's your entry point, because you can't be Anna Kournikova, or that doesn't exist in NASCAR, because our fans know that what it takes to win, and that's kind of the step one. Mm-hmm. So then if you can couple that with, you know, engaging personality, storylines, you know, one of the things, we have a group at NASCAR that helps drivers kind of embrace that. The hard part too, Steve, though, is that it has to be authentic.
That's,
you know,
right.
We can't slap a label on Ryan Blaney and say, yep, hey, you're going to be this guy. And he won't do that either. And if you've seen some interviews with him, he's like, either people like me or they don't. Like, I'm not going
right.
to be something I'm not. And we're not suggesting that. But there are ways that you can kind of bring that personality to life. And digital and social is a huge opportunity. I mean, look what Jimmy did with, you know, getting on, yes, social media. It completely changed fans' opinion of, like, we all knew that Jimmy is like a big time.
Yeah, I tell her, I was like, so there's two people. There's Jimmy, and then there's Jimmy Jam. And if you get around Jimmy Jam, he is not a corporate spokesman. You better hold on,
right?
Because he's a great person. But you know, I laugh. There are people I've never met that I feel like I have a relationship with. And it actually goes kind of both ways. So I'll follow them on Instagram, and I follow their story. Kevin Millar from the Red Sox. I'm a huge Red Sox fan. He lives in Texas, works for MLB Network, has some kids, and he's great on his story. Right. And I feel like I know his children. So when we finally met in person, he was like, I feel like I know you. I said, I feel like I know you. And it's all through social.
Right.
And I think, just like you said, the drivers that captivate it and are themselves.
Right.
We want them to like the real people.
Right. And I think that's what it makes or breaks it. If you're not authentic, then fans can see through that immediately. Mm-hmm. You're trying to push a sponsor, which I know the drivers have to do,
right,
and that's, you know, part of their role too. But if you want a connection with the fan, it needs to be real, and they will see through it immediately if it's not. And I think that you've got, you know, the great news is our young drivers have grown up with it, right?
Right.
So it's completely natural. Haley Deegan, Noah, I mean, they're out there. They put it all out there,
right?
Things that you and I probably wouldn't do, because we were like, oh, no, you can't say that.
They're
not afraid. So that's great. And for the drivers that want to do more of that and are not as natural at it, then we provide some of that help through partnerships that we do, because we know there are a ton of great drivers out there. There's not only two or three that you could like, but we have to expose more of those drivers to more fans.
I use my 15-year-old. So my son said, I have to have Snapchat. I'm like, well, you don't have to. He's like, no one texts. And I was like, what are you kidding? Surely no one texts. And then he proved, like, his friends, they don't text. Like, that's,
I don't even think the phone makes a call for the, does anybody even take a call on it anymore?
My children absolutely don't. They drive me nuts. I'm like, just call me. Dad, I can't call you in front of my friends.
Answer your phone. Why?
Yeah, right. Like, we've gone back from now, we just have high-tech pagers again. Like, you know, and like, now there's not even a phone line to it. So this is the tough one. I always ask everybody, and it's interesting when I get different questions or different answers to this question. What's the one thing? You've been here since 07 at NASCAR, personally, professionally, whatever you're willing to share to the fan or to the listener, what's the one thing that you could go back and say, you know, I wish I could do this over? For me, professionally, it's 2007. So it was the first year in the new car. I was Jeff Gordon's crew chief. We won 6 or 7 races. We led the points in the regular season by like 500. It got reset. We got back to another 100-point win. Or lead, and then Jimmy won the 4 of the last 5 and beat us for a championship. And in my mind, that was a point in time where Jeff and I, like, we never recovered. Like I tell everyone, racing for a championship is like being in love, right? You can't hold anything back. You either put it all out there, and when it doesn't work, it's the most crushing defeat ever. And I say I would go back and do it, not because there's a specific choice, but I was 28. And I didn't take the enormity of the event. I've been on championship teams my whole life. I just assumed there would be another chance, and there never was. We never had that shot again. So that's the one. If I could go back, that is a moment in time that I didn't handle correctly.
Right.
So you've had a great career, but is there the one meeting, the one phone call, the one something that you just said, you know what, I should have done this differently?
You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about a little bit of a similarity in not enjoying the moment, or you start talking right. about the enormity of the moment. I would go back to, I think it was like maybe year two, three at Nextel, and we again had this great marketing campaign. I ran the team in the office, and I was hard. Like, I was difficult to work for.
Right.
So this is opening the curtain. And, you know, it was minute by minute. And, you know, I think looking back on it today, we got results and we did a great job, but we didn't have as much fun. Now, we did at the beginning of it,
right,
but
right.
it became very quickly, you know, we lost the fun of
right.
it and the understanding that you're marketing a sport, and you know, you can deliver the results. What I learned, I think, is that you can deliver results, but how you get there is just as important as delivering them.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to do a better job now of managing the how and the what, because, you know, you can deliver results and also do it with a style that might be a little more easy to deal with. And I've adopted that in future kind of jobs and opportunities. So probably could have had a little more fun at that point, or at least been a little bit easier to work with.
It's tough because so I'm a big Belichick fan. I worked with Chad. I tell everybody, I wrote it in my book, you know, I retired because I saw what Chad did to be successful, and I knew I didn't have that in me.
Right.
Like, I just didn't have 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. I just didn't. So I had nothing to compare to other than him okay. being the best with Jimmy. And I thought, well, if that's what I need to do, then I need to do something else because I can't do that. I'm not willing okay. to – I shouldn't say I'm not willing. I'm just not. I'm not wired that way.
Right.
Like, I'm just not how I was be. So I completely understand what I'm saying. Jim, listen, I can't thank you enough for your time. I think it's great that someone who I know is as busy as you with everything that's going on would take a little bit of time. As I said, we're sitting here in the NASCAR Tower in Daytona Beach overlooking the racetrack. 4th of July weekend. It's a great weekend to be at the racetrack. So I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully I didn't embarrass myself too bad with my preparation. I've tried. Nate Ryan was so proud that my audio equipment worked. He's going to love this.
Well, I mean, I think you gave him a lot to be proud of today.
That's
so
good.
Thank you for having me. That's been a great conversation.
That's great. So that's another episode of La Tarte on location from Daytona Beach. Remember, you can get this podcast anywhere podcasts are available. Subscribe, rate, and review, and let us know what you think. Thank you.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.